Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. This hour, we're probably not going to be talking much about robots, but more about a new book that Arjuna Arda wrote called Better Than Sex. Now, I believe we've got Arjuna on the phone, and before I tell you much more about him, we have a couple of people in the studio who, if with your permission, Arjuna, I'd like to ask them what they think is better than sex.
Great.
Okay. John, who is a psychedelic artist, right, for the Oracle and a limo driver for many years, what do you think is better than sex?
I've always thought that sex was great, but it was much more wonderful with love. The combination of the two things are indescribable. You know,
okay.
Love is the most important thing in the world.
What, so love is better than sex?
And that's our love without sex is better than just sex without love.
Nice.
Okay, and our man off the street who just walked in the studio?
See. In some cases, foreplay.
Foreplay is better than sex?
Yeah. I've had nights of foreplay that I'll never forget with no sex at all.
Okay, and Mrs. Future?
Well, let's see. I'm in the love is better than sex school, too.
Oh, okay. So.
And living your dream. I think living your dream includes good sex, but good sex is just one of many ways of living a full, beautiful life.
Living your dream. Okay. Well, Arjuna?
Love is foreplay.
Love is foreplay. That's the, what do you think? Does that fit in with what you've heard before?
It's an interesting tactic. I've actually never had that happen before, that you get other people to comment first. Yeah, well, I've got to agree with all that. I think sex with love is definitely better than sex without love. And I also agree that foreplay is often better than more amazing and pleasurable than what follows. But actually, I've got to be honest with you, the way that the title of my book came was actually from something that was not really about sex at all. Maybe it's better I just tell you the story of how it happened and then we can take it from there.
Oh, yes, so, yes. Okay, so you're an awakening coach, I believe.
I'm an awakening coach, so I try and I'd be glad to tell you everything about what that means.
Okay,
so,
we've got about a 3-minute piece right now that we're going to go to break if you can.
Okay, great. Well, I'm an awakening coach. I train others to be awakening coaches. So I was in Vienna, Austria.
Yes.
Several years ago, I was speaking at the United Nations in Vienna.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, we had a workshop and I was training people in how to do awakening coaching with each other, which we can talk about after the break.
Okay.
So we went around the room the next day after they had their first taste and somebody said, wow, I feel all the stress has gone from my body. And somebody said, I feel so much love. And somebody said, I feel such creativity. People were reporting on the impact of awakening, which we can talk about later. And finally, there was a woman on the kind of the end of the circle. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, so what's your experience? And she said, I don't know. I just can't explain it. I feel so good. I just can't put words to it. I feel so good in my body. It's better than sex. And I said, okay, that's the title of my new book right there. So what's better than sex is awakening coaching, and I'd be glad to tell you more about it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned in your book that you call this also an open secret.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the open secret is the mystery of who we all really are, you know, which is actually very easy to discover. It's an open secret. It's not a closed secret. It's a secret available to everybody. It's who we are deeper than the usual trance state of endless thinking and reactive feeling. So just a scratch under the surface of the usual preoccupations of the mind.
Well, isn't that why we have all these world religions, so that we have many perspectives of trying to figure this out, different ways of...
Yes, and actually, you know...
Looking at the human mystery...
That's true. There are a lot of religions and traditions that try to figure it out. But what we've really done with awakening coaching is extracted the very essence of that free of a belief system. A lot of religions include a belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So awakening coaching, it's not Buddhist or Hindu or even Christian or anything. It's simply technology to shift consciousness. And we've really been able to extract the very most effective tools in the transformation of consciousness to give people direct experience of their true nature, which means awakening.
Mm. Now, how would that affect society, though? I mean, doesn't everything depend on that we blame each other for things?
It depends what kind of society you'd prefer. I can't talk about society in the broadest perspective because I've not had an opportunity to impact that, but I've certainly had the opportunity to work with individuals and with communities.
Yeah.
And what I can tell you is I think most people have a natural intuition of their true nature. Most people have an instinct for who they really are and what life could really be.
Yeah, they have some kind of homing beacon that tunes them in.
Exactly.
On the course.
So, uh-huh. I mean, I think we get a taste of that when we fall in love. You know, when you fall in love with somebody, there's at least a brief period where you see things in the best possible light. It brings the best out of you. And instinctively, you know what you're capable of. You know that you're a loving, good person. You're a creative person. Unfortunately, we are all of us very much affected by conditioned beliefs, by things we've been taught to believe, like there's not enough money, I'm not good enough, there's not enough time.
And that takes you out of the bliss of love, right?
Yeah, it takes you out of just who you really are. I mean, bliss is a very kind of strong word, which I think...
Yes, I noticed you have some objective to that. You did Joseph Campbell in Follow Your Bliss, I think you took some issue with in your book.
I didn't actually know that was originated by Joseph Campbell, but that's interesting. Thank you for reading the book, by the way. That's very gratifying.
My pleasure. We got 1 minute.
Okay. Yeah, so that's actually a whole different topic, really, is about, you know, why are we here? What is it that makes life truly fulfilling? Maybe we can come back to that. But awakening coaching is a technology, a very reliable technology that works every time to help people connect with the dimension of themselves that is limitless, that is free, that is resourceful, that is humorous, that is loving, that makes all the lights on the Christmas tree light up all at once.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more after the break. It sounds very compelling.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Arjuna Arada on his new book called Better Than Sex. Arjuna is a founder of Awakening Coaching. To really understand that more, perhaps, you know, I think you did this well in your book, Arjuna, is to look at the evolution of coaching, where it went from being just from the sports world to what you're doing now. Could you give us a little brief education on that evolution?
Brilliant. I can do that. I've just got to tell you before I say that, I'm kind of... Yes. A little overwhelmed by what a great interviewer you are. It's unusual that someone's read the book so carefully that they can ask really, really smart questions. So,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'm curious about evolving my own understanding on this topic. So,
great. Yeah. So, 25 years ago or so, if you went to a party and said, "I'm a coach," the answer would be, "Which sport?" Coaching was only a relationship that you found in sports, and this continued that way until. About 20, 25 years ago, when a man called Thomas J. Leonard, together with some other people, what they started to look at, what are the most effective factors that affect human brilliance? So what allows people to be really brilliant? And of course, one field where people continue expanding their level of excellence is sports. Every 4 years, we have the Olympics, and almost every Olympics, new records are broken.
Yes, and we all watch them.
So that's different from, say, classical music. It's not like the performance of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is better today than ever before, you know?
Yeah.
But with sports, new records are broken all the time.
Yeah.
So they looked into this and they thought, why is it that sports is a field that allows people to excel so dramatically? And the answer is because of the relationship between the coach and the athlete. Coaching is primarily a respectful, anti-hierarchical relationship. It's the antidote to a teacher or a master or somebody who's going to say, "You can be as great as me." A coach says, "You can be as great as you. You can be as great as your fullest potential. Maybe I can't do what you could do, but I can encourage you to bring forth your greatest potential." So that's, for example, Michael Phelps, who's won 18 gold medals in the Olympics. It was his coach, Bob Bowman, who coached him to win those medals, although Bob Bowman has never won a single medal or a single competition himself. Coaching is a respectful relationship where the coach bows to the brilliance of the athlete. So it was Thomas J. Leonard.
More of a collaborative thing in a way. Eh?
It's collaborative. It's highly respectful. Yeah. Mm. So it was Thomas Leonard who saw, hey, we could apply that same relationship to other fields of life. So he developed life coaching, then executive coaching, business coaching, wellness coaching. Unfortunately, Thomas Leonard died when he was only 46 years old in 2004, and he didn't have time to apply coaching to all of the areas where it could really be beneficial.
Yeah.
And the area of life that I'm aware of that is actually the most hierarchical And in fact, the most patriarchal is organized spirituality. You know, if you think about it, when people have a longing to know their deepest nature, that is where we get dogmatic, where we have everything written in a book that can't be questioned, where we've got leaders that are frequently men, you know, talking from the top down. So it's very, very hierarchical.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who think for themselves basically now just see the churches as social clubs. For the community to connect with themselves. But
and it's not only the well-established church. I mean, modern-day cults are equally hierarchical, or they don't have the same history as religious organizations.
Yes, so, like the baby boomers were coming up with gurus, following the whole guru trip from the 70s.
Exactly. So we've been experimenting for the last 20-plus years. Yeah. What would happen if we took spirituality and applied the principles of coaching to spirituality, and it's been highly, highly, highily successful. I did actually, I'm nearly 60 now, and I did spend a number of years in hierarchical spiritual context. You know, I had my share of knowing what the guru setup was like.
Sure, you got to learn. And isn't the message often that you are your own star, that the guru is often trying to just liberate yourself to be who you really are?
Well, that may be theoretically the message. It's not very often what is actually practiced. So it's a guru-based organization is very often focused on the leader. So about 20 years ago, we started experimenting, and there's a kind of whole development to how this happened. We started to experiment with people facilitating awakening with each other. So they learned the principles of how to do it, but they weren't people with long beards and robes. They were just ordinary people.
Sure.
And we actually found that in terms of results, in terms of people having direct, doubt-free experience of their true nature as limitless, actually a non-hierarchical context is way more effective. That's an incredible thing. People go deeper. They have more stable recognition than I ever saw happening in hierarchical guru-based setup. Mm.
So it's a more of a stable relationship. You know, it can last through time as well. Whether coach...
But not necessarily. It's a good point. But actually, the nice thing about a coaching relationship is, you know, it's mutual. I mean, Joe can coach Mary into awakening on Monday, and Mary can coach Joe on Wednesday, and it lasts for 8, 10, or 12 weeks, and then actually you can move on, you know, and you've had the insights and the breakthroughs you needed. So there's actually very much free of dependence. It leaves you with your own direct experience.
Everyone finds their own center through the process and becomes, I guess Maslow would call a self-actualized.
Yes, and that's actually a very nice term. Thank you for bringing in Maslow, because what we emphasize in awakening, there are different aspects to it. Having a taste, which we often call a spiritual experience, having a taste of silence, of stillness, of infinite energy, of infinite space, of being love itself, having a taste is great. But a taste can equally be frustrating, you know, if you're not able to live it in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
If you're not able to live it in your parenting and your relationships and in your creativity and at work and in your sexuality and everything, if you're not able to live that in your day-to-day life, it can be frustrating. So a very big element of what we do with awakening coaching has to do with how you can live this in your day-to-day life, how it can become the very foundation.
Well, that has always been the issue with many workshops where people go to Esalen and they have amazing insights and looking at their programming and how they can update it. And then they go back into their everyday world, and it's hard to maintain that awareness that you had in the workshop.
Exactly. That's sometimes called the rubber band effect.
You know, how do you resolve that issue?
Well, you see, we don't really... That's a really good question. We, you know, first of all, we're not working in weekend intensives. Coaching is a relationship that happens through coaching sessions every couple of weeks. And the way that awakening coaching works, as you know from the book, there are 7 innate brilliances that we bring forth in coaches. Mm-hmm. So a coach will meet a client every couple of weeks for a couple of hours. Usually it's done on the phone or on Skype. And then there's a 2-week gap between sessions. And in that gap, a really good coach can select exactly the right practices for the client can do. These are usually very short practices that take just a few minutes a day.
Yeah.
But it's the right practices to change your habits, to change the way that you live your life, so that the way you live becomes more aligned with your deepest potential. Let me give you a really quick example.
Yeah, what would be a good example for them?
Yeah, a good example would be in a moment of awakening, you recognize yourself to be love itself. You have a moment where you realize that, wow, you know, love is not just something I'm feeling. Love is who I am, you see?
Yeah.
But then you go back to your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever. How much are you going to live being love with somebody with whom you're in a personal relationship. So we can give practices to intensify that. You know, we can find out what are the habits that interfere with love. So maybe,
yeah, like when someone takes you out of it for whatever reason.
Yeah, so maybe there's a habit of quickly going to criticism or judgment. Well, we can give a practice of 3 or 4 times a day, give an appreciation to your partner. Mm. Or there might be a practice of withholding and being secretive. So we could give a practice of radical honesty to be able to bring more direct, simple
I see. So you're saying that people hold each other back from their full potential and to start breaking some of those patterns or being conscious of them. The coach can help you become aware of these so that you can be more free.
Exactly. So what we're looking at here is tailor-made practices. You see, practices that are uniquely suitable for that individual. Although we may all be the same in our kind of oneness, you know, in our essence, we are absolutely different in our individuation, in our self-expression. And so each person needs the right balance of practices to bring their life back into alignment with their deepest potential and the gift they were born to give in this life.
Yes, interesting. Now, it must be interesting for you to see more and more people doing this and probably connecting up in a social network in and of itself that's starting to create collaborative things. And we'd probably like to get into that a little bit after the break.
Yes.
Up here. But first, we also have a question from the audience about where you had your deepest longing.
Okay. Well, for me, I think my deepest longing from childhood was to be free of suffering. I was born into a situation there where there was probably an unusually high level of psychological suffering, and my longing was to get free of that, and that was really what led me to explore spirituality, because I could see that psychotherapy really wasn't going to cut the mustard, so I looked for something a little more powerful. That's why I started to explore spiritual practices.
Yeah. We'll be right back. We're talking to Arjuna Arda about Better Than Sex, his new book on opening the open secret of awakening coaching. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Arjuna Arda. Okay, on the ecstatic art of awakening coaching. Now, we also have a question from the audience. People are wondering, how do you match up people with the right coach?
That's a good question. You know, I think actually there's a sort of organic way that happens.
Yeah.
We train people in the methods of awakening coaching, but each person who becomes a coach actually brings to the training and to the relationship their own mastery. The way that I measure mastery is actually the sum of your life experience. So everybody has mastery.
And your ability to share it?
Yeah, well, everybody, I mean, by everybody, I mean all 7 billion people has passed through a unique set of challenges and triumphs, right?
Sure. Yeah, we're all alive.
We're all alive, but there are things we've done really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are calamities we've suffered that have actually, in a way, made us stronger. That unique set of challenges and strengths means that you have a unique gift to share. There are people who can benefit from coaching where you will be exactly the best person to serve those people, not because you're the best at awakening coaching, but because of your unique mastery.
Well, that's, I guess, where the networking comes in. How do you connect the right people with the right people for that? Do you have a social network that you see evolving yourself as you awaken people?
Yeah, sure. There's social media, but also we have a service called Find a Coach, which is on our website, where you can go and select a coach by according to various parameters, what language they speak and what their area of speciality is.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, interesting.
I actually think, you know, that the art of choosing the right coach is a very, very important thing. It's not just anybody who can coach you. You need to be coached by somebody who is displaying relaxed confidence, what I call inspired certainty, in an area that you are somewhat struggling with. So if you can find somebody who really has got it down in an area that you find difficult, that person will be a good coach for you.
Finding somebody who has what you call inspired certainty in the field that you want to know about or you want to strive for.
Exactly. So, I mean, a really good example of this, actually, let me just give you a great example, is several years ago, I went to a festival in Sweden where people were gathered for a week to enjoy themselves. And they brought in an Indian nun, a young woman from India who, since childhood, had been a nun. So clearly, she'd never been kissed, let alone had sex with anybody.
Mm.
And a woman in the audience stood up. She was 8 months pregnant. And she said, "I'm about to have a baby. Could you please guide me on the best principles for being a mother?" And my jaw just dropped. Like, why on earth anybody asks that question to a celibate nun. I mean, go ask a mother, for God's sake, you know. Sounds like a stupid story, but actually that's what we do a lot. We ask the wrong people. You know, if you want to have great relationships, ask somebody who's been married for a long time and is still in love. If you want to make money, ask somebody who's got a very easy flow with money. Select somebody to coach you who has mastery in the area that you're trying to get mastery in yourself.
Right, right. And with the technology available today, with social networking, it's easier than ever to do that. But I guess the first step then is to really figure out for yourself what you really would like to create for yourself.
Yes, and that's actually a very big part of awakening coaching. I think you referred to it already. Everything in awakening coaching begins with the question, what is your deepest longing? That's a fundamental question. And by deepest longing, we make a distinction between longing and desire. You see, desire is very often conditioned. It's what you've been taught you should want. There's a sort of compulsion about it. A really great example of that is money, right? Mm-hmm. We've all been taught we should have money. Now, I've done a lot of research on this, including coaching some fabulously wealthy people. And what I can tell you is there is no direct correlation between money and well-being. So people who make millions of dollars, they're not happier, they're not more fulfilled, they're not more contented. There is a kind of a bell.
Yeah, I've seen it. If you have a certain minimum amount to handle the basic Maslow hierarchy of needs, you know, the survival, roof over your head, food, sex.
Exactly. So in America, and of course, hopefully, sex and money have no connection. You can have sex without money. But you know, in America,
a minimum amount of all these things, at least.
Yeah, in America, that bell curve peaks at slightly less than $100,000 a year. That means if you're making less than $100,000 and you make a bit more, you will probably actually enjoy your life more. But here's the interesting thing: the bell curve goes down the other side. So what that means is, if you're making $1 million and you then make $2 million and nothing else changes in your life, research has shown that the quality of your life will actually go down. That means you're going to feel less happy, you'll have more stress, more marital conflict, higher rate of divorce, et cetera, et cetera. So actually, that's an example of a desire. We've been told to want money, but it's not necessarily going to cut the mustard, right?
Well, not if you have a lot of responsibilities, then you wanted time to explore the world, and suddenly you're chained to a job. No, you don't want the money.
There's loads of things like that. There's also all kinds of technological gadgets which we've been trained to want. Lots of things we've been taught to want through advertising don't necessarily make you happier.
So we
need to make the important distinction between desire and longing. Longing is for things that are natural to you. Longing is to come home to yourself, to feel peace, to experience love, things that are actually your true nature. Longing brings you home and actually brings you into a condition of contentment and desirelessness. So we ask the question, what is your deepest longing? And we really take time with people to drill down through all the layers of conditioned desire to find out what is your true longing.
Mm. Well, it could be to be at home, to be the longing to go home.
Yes. Right? But that certainly, for almost everybody, is an important part of it. But it also, I think most people discover that a big part of longing is the longing to give the gift you were born to give.
Right.
To
find, well, there's to that. Find, right.
To find your purpose. For me right now, talking to you about what we're talking about now, I don't need to be paid for this. You know? I'll do this all the time. It's my calling. It's what I love.
Sure.
And my deepest passion is to help other people find the activity where getting paid is just the gravy. They're doing what they love to do. They're doing what fills their heart with joy. And what's more important, they're doing what brings joy to others.
Mm. Mm. So spread the joy through doing it yourself.
Right. Well, let's all, you know, we don't know what comes before and after this life, but let's make a good life while we're here.
So how do you deal with all the constant blaring of negativity on the news and stuff like that? Do you just block that out, or do you reframe it in a way where it doesn't take you out of your wah, your joy?
I mean, I think there's two aspects to that. One aspect of negativity on the news is real suffering. So there are people who are genuinely suffering. I think it came to a head recently in Missouri, you know, with the shooting of Michael Brown.
Yeah.
That was just an incident. I mean, obviously it was an important incident. He died. But that incident unleashed a whole awareness about racial tension between white police and black population in Missouri.
Yeah, there's a powder keg there.
So that's important to know about that. You know, that's really, I think it's important that we can, as many people as possible, can be aware of pockets of suffering where we can get free of it. So that's one thing. I don't think it's a good idea to block that out. I want to know what's going on, and I want to be able to tune in and to pray and to send love and to do practical things when I can. There, the other aspect of negativity is opinion. And the best way to tune into that is make yourself a little video and stick it on YouTube, as I have done many times, and look at the comments. You'll see that the majority of comments on YouTube are what are called trollers, you know, people who just stumble upon videos and just spew hatred for no reason.
That's why we have call screeners at the radio station.
Yeah, right. Well, I think YouTube needs some sort of call screening. That's, I think, something that we just have to take in our stride. I remember years ago, I was celebrating New Year's Eve with my friend Coleman Barks, who did a lot of Rumi translation. He's an old man now.
Yes, and we'll be calling you, sure.
So Coleman Barks and I, we were enjoying New Year's Eve, and I said to him, I just wrote this piece for Huffington Post called Why It's Wise to Worship a Woman, and it was about advising how men can really learn to deeply love women. And I got like a barrage of hatred from macho guys or something, anti-feminist guys, I guess, saying, oh, I don't want to worship women. So, and I got this barrage of hatred, and I was telling Coleman about it. He said in his thick Georgian accent, oh, you mean those little things they write at the bottom? When you post something, you mean when they write those things below? He said, don't ever read those, Arjuna. You'll never write an article again. Don't ever read those comments.
And yet, people thrive on them at Amazon. You want to read about products. We're kind of, it's a feedback loop system.
It is.
But how do you deal with it?
Well, there is a distinction between the unnecessary suffering in the world, which I think we need to be informed about, and simply just people being, what's the word? What can I say on the radio? People being like, blank, blank, you know? Just people
trolls,
being jerks.
Just being, you know, internet
people being
trolls.
Jerks, you know, jerks is an respectable word. And I think you've just got to learn to laugh, really. I mean, this happened to me. I made a video that I put on YouTube that got more than 1 million hits.
Yeah.
It was called Dear Woman. And I mean, honestly, 90% of those comments were just like...
Yeah, troll stuff. Well, listen, we'll come back after the break to talk more with Arjuna Aga on his book, Better Than Sex, about the ecstatic art of awakening coaching.
Great.
Talk to you in a minute.
And we'll take some calls at 479-1080.
We have more coaches.
Welcome back to the Dr. Feature Show. We're talking with Arjuna on his book, Better Than Sex, on the Ecstatic Art of Awakening Coaching. And we were just talking about the issue of dealing with trolls on things we write on the net. And, it's one of the things that can take you out of a high mood, you know, to see these stupid trolls. So we were just thinking during the break about a solution to this involving Siri, where Siri could basically handle these trolls and create a whole protocol by which she would engage them and help them evolve, because even the dumbest trolls need coaching too, even if it's only by an artificial intelligence.
Well, you know, I think you've got a kind of a point there indirectly in that let's forget the trolls, when anyone is rude or aggressive, why would anyone ever behave that way? It's probably because they are hurting in some way. So that's
they need attention in some way. Attention is a form of love, after all.
So actually, I think that's where coaching can be a really effective way of recognizing the symptoms of disconnection from yourself, from your truer nature, and then finding ways to return there. Because what I've come to realize, you know, from years and years of doing this kind of work is everybody deep down, everybody wants to feel relaxed and spacious, and from there everybody wants to give their gift. Some of us are deeply prevented from doing that by conditioning, by habits, by resistance, by pushing things down into ourselves, but deep down everybody's got a heart of gold, and it just takes some patience and support to bring it out.
Do you think that ADHD and our reflection of all the judgments that we've been having on each other, not giving each other the space just to be ourselves?
Well, actually, there's a great book out, you know, by John Gray, who's a good buddy of mine, called Focus. It's new on Amazon.
Yeah.
And it actually looks at the biochemical aspects of ADHD. So that's quite an interesting read. But, you know, really, this is a time, I think, that when you read the news, you can see there's a lot of difficult things going on in the world. And it means, actually, that can be bad news, but it also means there's a kind of a quickening. It means that there's more of an urgency to really get in touch with our deepest creativity, our deepest goodness, get in touch with who we really are and step out and make a difference. Oftentimes, you and I and everybody we know, we all know that what really holds us back from giving our deepest gifts is a kind of procrastination and often a kind of laziness. You know, we put things off, we hold back, we say, no, who am I? There's, you know, things already being done in the world. There's really an urgency for sane, intelligent people like your listeners to really raise your voice and make a difference. You know, get busy on social networks, get busy with blogging and making videos, and just give your voice to solutions, things that make a difference, that can make us whole. And really, I think one of the best ways to get in touch with your deepest gift, the way that you can contribute and make this planet a better place, is through coaching. Coaching that can help you tap into your true nature and give your gift from there.
So are you teaching people to become coaches?
Yes.
Well, and then it spread the dynamic of being an awakening coach with those that are in your social network?
Exactly. I've trained more than 1,400 coaches now all over the world.
And they're all training people now themselves?
No. The training happens through a school, because it has to be, that has to be done by people that are very, very experienced. But no, the people we've trained, they go and work with clients, and they usually apply what we've taught them in their own field of expertise. So I've trained business coaches to integrate awakening coaching. I've trained psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, consultants, people with all kinds of backgrounds to study with us to integrate awakening into their existing professional work.
Hmm. When they awaken, is everyone awakening to a new identity?
What you're awakening to really is the dimension of yourself, which is limitless. So usually we identify with a dimension of ourselves that has boundaries, that has limitations, that's me separate from everything else. A moment of awakening is where you recognize the infinite nature of consciousness. It's like looking into the sky. You recognize consciousness without boundaries, which means at the same time you recognize what in quantum physics they call the unified field. You recognize the field of infinite possibilities out of which all creativity comes, all love arises, all solutions arise. When you suddenly wake up in the morning and you've suddenly got the solution in mind to a problem, where did that come from? You had a deep rest, you went to sleep. You wake up in the morning and suddenly you've got a good idea. Where did that good idea come from? It comes from your deepest nature, and it needs the right environment to step forward. Mm. We train people to become infinitely creative, to become radically brilliant.
Isn't that the same process as a lot of spiritual traditions call reaching the Godhead?
Maybe, I don't know. But
well, there's no separation between us and the divine, or you get rid of the hierarchical dynamic and you become part of the larger process of the life itself. And
yes, well, I think, you know, the important thing here in England, I don't know if you have this saying in America, but in England, when I grew up, they used to say the proof of the pudding is in the eating, you know? And so we can find all sorts of theoretical parallels. What I'm really happy about with the work we're doing with awakening coaching is that it's highly effective each and every time.
So you're bringing it into everyday life.
And we're not just talking theoretically about maybe reaching Godhead, you know, in after many lifetimes or many decades. We're talking about effective technologies that shift consciousness right now, today.
A living, breathing experience in the now.
If you read the book, if people read the book, you'll see that the book is full of stories of the results of doing this kind of work that are immediate, that happen now, that help people working in hospitals or working in all kinds of environments to bring forth their deepest nature and their deepest love now, today, not in some future theoretical state.
Nice, nice. And you said you've trained 1,400 people in this process so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'd like to ask, Arjuna, if you could maybe embrace a little bit of your practical technique for us here in our radio audience today, and maybe send us off into the future with something that we could address right now.
Nice. Yeah. You know, the whole thing, the whole key is to develop a curiosity about your true nature. And we can do that right now, because in this moment right here in this moment, as we're listening to this on the radio or whatever, you can hear the sound of my voice. That's one indisputable thing, is you can hear the sound of my voice. So just take a moment and recognize that that process of hearing is actually miraculous. You know, there's the voice, there's the mechanism of the microphone, the radio, then the earpiece, whatever you're listening on, the loudspeaker. But then there's the hearing, and you say, I hear the voice. Well, what is that I? What is that me? That thing we refer to called me. It's that which is hearing. It is that which we call me or I, which is seeing the movement of color and movement and texture in this moment. We take it for granted that this is being experienced, but it's actually a miracle. You know, this is a body with eyes and ears, but what is this living consciousness which is able to meet physical reality and experience it, that to kiss reality, to see beauty in reality? What is that? That is a great way to start, is just to get curious. What is this thing or this presence, or what is this that I call me, that I refer to as I? What is it? What's it made of? How big is it? What color is it? What's its texture? If you get curious, if you get curious about your true nature, that curiosity actually releases the perfume of who you really are beyond the usual procession of indoctrinated beliefs and reactive feelings which make up the mind. Just to get curious in this moment, to pay attention, wow, this moment is being experienced, wow. This moment is being seen and heard and felt, wow. What exactly is responsible for that? We take it so much for granted, but when you just look at it or feel it in a fresh way, you discover that your very nature, who you are, is an absolute untapped miracle. Tap into that and you will discover infinity. You will discover silence. You will discover love beyond any possibility of expression. You will discover a sort of source of solutions, which is infinitely possible to find the resolution to any problem you name in your life. You are the Godhead, actually, if you want to put it that way. Uh-huh. You are the solution to everything, but you have to develop a curiosity about who you really are. You've got to scratch beneath the surface and discover the mystery that we've all taken for granted. That is the open secret.
Wow. And you're optimistic that our species will get this level of awareness on a mass basis fast enough that we'll can create a heaven on earth if we want.
I don't know. It's not really my business.
Deal with your own circle of
I do what I can do. And I'm doing with my life what I think to be the most useful thing, which is to train people to practice in this way. What's going to happen to the bigger picture? I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows. But what I do know is that we can use this day today.
Yeah.
This very day of August, whatever it is, 27th, I've lost track. 26. We can use this very day in the most intelligent way possible. We can love deeply today. We can give our gifts today. We can be creative today. We can be humorous today. We can do a little radio show today and talk to the people of Santa Cruz about their infinite possibilities. We can use this day in a smart way. And that, I think, is a well-used life. Yeah. If you can live this day and get in the habit of living this day, giving the very best you can, then you can die peacefully. Whether you die in a nuclear holocaust or die of old age at some point, doesn't really matter at that point. You've given the very, very best you can.
Indeed.
And that's, I think, the fastest shortcut to peace and contentment.
Yeah. And if you're not in awe, you're missing it.
That's yes. Right.
Well, thank you, Arjuna, for being on our show today.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Your perspective.
Thank you.
And,
yes.
Best of luck in this evolution of your whole process here. It sounds like it'll affect the entire planet if you're successful.
Thank you. Yes, the book is Better Than Sex. It's on Amazon as a Kindle or as a physical, yes. Also on iTunes and all those good places.
Yes, Better Than Sex, new book by Arjuna Arda. Thank you again.
All right, folks, it's been another great week here on the Dr. Future Show on KSCO on Santa Cruz. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. It's Arjuna. Lovely.